This is making things even. This is making things more equal and more fair.
That's what the State Department says about new restrictions on Chinese diplomats. It's Friday, September 4th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, news of a possible early coronavirus vaccine brings questions about political decisions. A verdict in a Hong Kong case against Jimmy Lai. India decides on how it will handle its border dispute with China. And a U.S. Marine will remain behind bars in the Philippines. It is all on today's VOA Asia. The United States is requiring senior Chinese diplomats to receive prior approval before visiting U.S. university campuses and meeting with local U.S. government officials, citing the need for reciprocity between the two countries. The new measures come as Washington says Chinese authorities have imposed significant restrictions on American diplomats working in China. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Cheng spoke exclusively with department spokesperson Morgan Ortegas about it.
We actually viewed it as an attempt to try and get our diplomats in China to have the same rights and freedom and access to pursue normal diplomatic activities that Chinese diplomats are having here. And when we were unable to get the Chinese, to get the PRC to engage with us in a meaningful dialogue, we simply reciprocated with the same restrictions on Chinese diplomats that our diplomats face in China. So this isn't an escalation. If anything, this is making things even. This is making things more equal and more fair, right? So that's really a hallmark of this administration. You know, we want things to be free and fair, whether we're talking about activities of diplomats, whether we're talking about trade, tariffs, you know, any of the things. We want these things to be fair, but we're no longer going to operate in an environment where our diplomats face undue, harsh approval processes for their activities in China while their diplomats run around here unimpeded in the United States. That's, you know, all we want is simple reciprocity.
Ortegas told our correspondent that State Department officials had made attempts to solve the situation to no avail.
After multiple attempts of trying to get the PRC to allow our U.S. diplomats to have the same freedom and access, and after being rebuffed multiple times, we said, okay, fine, we will now have your diplomats will have the same requirements that are on our diplomats in China. That's reciprocity. That's fairness. And if the PRC, if the government would like to get to a point where our diplomats are more free and unimpeded in China to do the normal diplomatic activities that we do around the world, great. We'd be happy to loosen our restrictions here as well. But we're not going to have one way of doing business in China for our diplomats and a separate way of doing business in the United States for their diplomats. That's not going to fly anymore.
VOA State Department correspondent Nike Cheng speaking exclusively with State Department spokesperson Morgan Ortegas. China's Washington embassy called the move yet another unjustified restriction and barrier on Chinese diplomatic and consular personnel that runs counter to the self-proclaimed values of openness and freedom of the U.S. side. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. An Afghan prisoner swap ends, peace talks might finally begin. Rights groups slam the Chinese leader's latest calls to Sinonize Tibetan Buddhism. Typhoon Maysak lashes South Korea. Myanmar seals off its capital amid a virus surge. Taiwan introduces a new passport cover to draw distinction from China. And Twitter confirms that the Indian Prime Minister's personal website account was hacked. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. The federal government has told states to prepare for a coronavirus vaccine to be ready to distribute by November 1st. The timeline raised concern among public health experts about an October surprise, a vaccine approval driven by political considerations ahead of a presidential election rather than science. Meanwhile, a group of medical professionals laid out a set of guidelines for local jurisdictions and poll workers on how to keep in-person safe and what voters can do to minimize their COVID-19 risk when voting in the upcoming election. Dr. Kritita Kupali, Vice Chair of the Global Health Committee with the Infectious Disease Society of America, talked with VOA's Lori London about the recommendation.
We outlined a number of things in these guidelines, and some of the highlights of those guidelines that came out were recommendations for polling locations, recommendations for infection control, and recommendations for voters and recommendations for poll workers. And there's some pretty high-level recommendations in there. The most important aspect of these guidelines are going to be making sure that voters and poll workers are wearing masks, maintaining physical distance, and having good hand hygiene. For polling locations, it's going to be making sure they've been relocated to large, well-ventilated areas that can accommodate these measures that we've been talking about. So we've mentioned places like large arenas, school gymnasiums, conference centers, and we really want to try and avoid the local church or senior care facility. So I think those are the really important top line recommendations that we've made in these recommendations.
We've been hearing a lot about vaccines. The White House talking about potentially a vaccine before the election even, but there are now concerns that pushing a vaccine before it's ready, people would be afraid to actually get one. Is it realistic that we could see fully viable vaccine before the end of the year, before the election? Or would that be something that would be a little bit of unknown as far as its efficacy?
I'm skeptical that we would be able to see a vaccine before the election. That being said, you know, I'm not privy to the data that the Data Safety Monitoring Board is looking at. If they're looking at data and the data looks like the vaccine is much more efficacious than those receiving the placebo, then potentially, but I really think that you would have to show clear benefit. And I think that given the environment that we're in, where there's so much politicalization around the vaccine, there's so much politicalization around the outbreak, I think that approving a vaccine before the election, you would be very hard pressed to get people to feel like it wasn't a political move at this point. I think you have to have a very high bar in terms of the science to make people feel comfortable.
Well, since we're on the topic of vaccines, the U.S. has just declined to join a group of nations that working in collaboration for a vaccine with the World Health Organization leading that effort. What is your view on the U.S. declining to do it, go its own way?
I think it's a very unfortunate decision. I think that it could have real political repercussions beyond public health. And also, we're taking a real big gamble because if one of the vaccines in that initiative ends up panning out and the one that we're working on doesn't, then we're going to be at a huge loss. So I think this is a poor decision by the United States.
The Trump administration has brought on another person, another doctor into the coronavirus task force. He apparently has been pushing for a new strategy that includes something called herd immunity. Just basically let everyone get COVID and drive some sort of immunity among the population. There have been a lot of critics of that, though, saying that would cost many lives. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. So this physician is not an infectious disease doctor. He's a neuroradiologist, which means that he doesn't have expertise in infectious diseases, virology, immunology. And doing the math, conservative estimates say that to reach herd immunity, you have to have about 65% of the population infected. So that would be 195 million more infections. And if you're looking at the fatality rate, that's about 1% more deaths. So we would be looking at 1.9 million deaths. That would be a huge loss to our population and also a huge burden on our healthcare system. I by no means think that's a good idea for our country or for our population. If we let this herd immunity idea go, as Dr. Atlas is suggesting, we would need to see close to 1.9 or 2 million more deaths happen. That's a significant number of deaths. And, you know, we're still learning about what immunity to coronavirus means. And so, you know, we've been seeing cases cases pop up here and there of reinfection with COVID. And so we don't even know once you've had it, we know that there's some people who can get it again. I don't think it's a good idea at all. And I think most people in my profession who are infectious disease physicians or have expertise with infectious diseases feel the same way.
BOA's Lori London speaking with Dr. Krotika Kopali, Vice Chair of the Global Health Committee with the Infectious Disease Society of America. Hong Kong media tycoon and longtime China critic Jimmy Lai was found not guilty of criminal intimidation Thursday. The pro-democracy activist was also arrested last month under Beijing's controversial national security law. Adam Reed reports.
A Hong Kong court declared media tycoon and pro-democracy activist Jimmy Lai not guilty of criminal intimidation on Thursday. It brings to an end one of several cases currently against him after his high-profile arrest last month under a controversial new Chinese national security law. The verdict for this case dated back to a 2017 incident and was unrelated to his recent arrest. Lai has been an outspoken critic of Beijing and had been accused of using foul language when confronting a reporter from the Oriental Daily News, a major competitor to Lai's tabloid Apple Daily. Prosecutors in the case said Lai had intimidated the Oriental Daily reporter. However, his lawyers argued that Lai had been followed by reporters for 3 years, and his comments were not intended to harm the reporter, but only to express his exasperation. Frequent visits to the US and meetings with senior Washington figures had led to Lai being labelled a traitor by China. After his August arrest, around 200 police officers searched offices of the Apple Daily newspaper. Lai is also facing separate court cases for illegal assembly relating to anti-government protests last year.
Reuters' Adam Reed. India said on Thursday the way ahead to resolve the border dispute with China was through negotiation and peaceful dialogue. Anurag Srivastava is the spokesperson for the Indian Foreign Ministry.
Now, the way ahead is negotiations, both through the diplomatic and military channels. The Indian side is firmly committed to resolving all outstanding issues through peaceful dialogue. We therefore strongly urge the Chinese side to sincerely engage the Indian side with the objective of expeditiously restoring the peace and tranquility in the border areas through complete disengagement and de-escalation in accordance with the bilateral agreements and protocols.
The Indian Army had said in a statement that Chinese troops had carried out military movements over the weekend to change the status quo in their disputed border in a fresh flare-up between the two sides. The Army report said having spotted the Chinese troops' movement, Indian troops mobilized to deter further encroachment, and the confrontation did not escalate into a clash between the two sides. The latest incident occurred on Saturday, August 29th, on the shores of Pengangso Lake, where the two sides have been locked in a face-off since April. India on Wednesday banned another 118 mobile apps as it stepped up the pressure on Chinese technology companies following the standoff with Beijing at the border. The tension between nuclear-armed India and China has simmered since June when 20 Indian soldiers were killed in a border skirmish with Chinese troops. You're listening to VOA Asia. A new fire broke out on a supertanker carrying about 2 million barrels of oil in the Indian Ocean off the east coast of Sri Lanka, that according to a spokesman for the country's navy. The spokesman added that one of its 23 crew members was missing and another injured. Olivia Chan reports.
Authorities say that a new fire broke out on a massive and fully loaded oil supertanker off the coast of Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka's navy said on Thursday that flames had spread to the bridge of the ship. One of its 23 crew was injured and another missing. Two Russian warships had left a Sri Lankan harbour to assist in the firefighting. The cargo area of the ship is reportedly still intact. Only the engine room and surrounding areas were damaged. A navy spokesman said the military had sent an aircraft and two ships to aid in the rescue. The New Diamond is what's called a very large crude carrier. That's the naming classification for the second largest type of oil tanker in the world. It's chartered by Indian Oil Corp and was carrying the equivalent of about 2 million barrels of oil. The ship had sailed from Kuwait and was headed toward India, according to ship tracking data.
That was Reuters' Olivia Chan. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Enjoy the day and enjoy the weekend ahead.